Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
Prepare yourself for nonstop hilarity. The funniest 15 minutes of your life or any other. Senator Obama, the microphone is all yours.
Contrary to the rumors that you've heard, I was not born in a manger. I was actually born on Krypton and sent here by my father, Jor-El, to save the planet Earth.
That's the immediate cry of the gospel, not who's married to whom, or who is adopting children and who shouldn't, who is serving as a bishop in the church.
Well, if you're reading along in the Ten Commandments and you come across this one, you shall not commit adultery, I can guarantee you one thing. If you're a man reading that commandment, and it doesn't only apply to men, but if you're a man reading that commandment, you will feel guilty reading this commandment, you shall not commit adultery. And then you pick up the Bible and you see what Jesus has to say about adultery. He says that adulterers are not only those who will go out and find someone other than their wife to have relations with, but adulterers are those who even look at a woman so as to lust after her. And the guilt compounds. So what do we do with this commandment, you shall not commit adultery? We're going to answer that question, among others, with our roundtable of pastors this Thursday, the 23rd? Yes, October the 23rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. You're listening to Issues Etc. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours of the program, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or you can email us with questions or comments on the commandment, you shall not commit adultery, a little bit later on our other subjects as well. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Talk back at issuesetc.org. In the second hour of the program, Dr. Robert George is going to be our guest. We'll spend 10 minutes talking with him about Senator Barack Obama and the abortion issue. It's been said that he holds some of the most radical views with regard to abortion, but his campaign and the good senator himself object. No, he's mainstream. He's thinking with the rest of America. We'll see what Dr. Robert George of Princeton University has to say about that. And then, if that's not enough for the second hour, we have Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on to round off the second hour, part four of our five-part daily series with him on answering the objections of unbelievers today. The big problem, the problem of evil, it comes down to this, many say, how can a loving God permit such evil in the world? If God is loving and all-powerful, then this problem of evil is insurmountable. Such a God must not even exist. We'll answer that objection with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, Hour 2 of Issues, etc. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Our pastor's roundtable today, Pastor Bart Day joins us on the phone from Houston, Texas, where he serves as associate pastor and headmaster at Memorial Lutheran Church and School. Pastor Day, welcome back.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me on again. I appreciate it.
Right here in the studio, Pastor Gary McCracken, pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Troy, Missouri. Gary and I are long acquainted. He was a field worker of mine back in the old days, as we say, although I think Gary's got a couple of years on me. Gary, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
And also Pastor Mike Kettner, pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Jacob, Illinois, right down by the river in southern Illinois. Thanks for driving up.
Thank you very much for having me.
Pastor Day, the first one goes to you. This commandment, you shall not commit adultery. Have you broken it?
You know, it is a very dangerous thing to try to wiggle oneself out from under God's law, and not a very good place to be found. So absolutely, I have broken the commandment in thought, word, and deed. Jesus, anyone who would try to wiggle out from under such a commandment, of course, would heed the words of Jesus in Matthew 5, where he was, of course, speaking to the disciples, telling them that you've heard that it was said, speaking of the law of Moses, not to commit adultery. And then Jesus, of course, really fillets them to the very core with words that if anyone is even looking lustfully at a woman, he's already committed adultery with her in his heart, going on to speaking about how out of the heart come all such evil and lust and greed and adultery and covetousness. So certainly I've broken it, and I think to try to wiggle oneself out from under that commandment, as if one has kept it, is quite a dangerous place to put oneself.
Would that make you an adulterer? I mean, that term carries with it such import. To say adulterer would mean, in most people's minds, someone who has broken their marriage vow. Would your breaking of the commandment, even in thought, according to Jesus' words, make you an adulterer?
Oh, I think so. I think so. I mean, I believe so. I'm certainly happy to call myself an adulterer just as easily as I would call myself a murderer. And then the glorious thing of not trying to self-justify oneself according to the law, but rather than to see Jesus, who knew no sin, to become sin. And is Jesus himself not an adulterer? And is Jesus himself not a murderer by taking our sin into himself? So I understand that people want to maybe more narrowly define what adultery is, to the act of being unfaithful to one's spouse, physically unfaithful in the marriage. And that certainly is adultery, but I think that there's certainly far more to it than simply that. And so, again, I think one of the wonderful things about Lutheranism is never trying to find an excuse and wiggle oneself out from under the law, but to understand that the law is crushing us, and that is our sin. But thanks be to God that Jesus Christ has become all such sin for us that he might take it away.
Pastor McCracken, what exactly does God forbid when he says, "You shall not commit adultery"?
He is forbidding the ungodly attention and lust, and at times even acting on that lust with regard to someone other than your spouse. As the commandment says that we are to fear and love God, therefore right there we break the commandment, because we do not fear and love God. And because we do not fear and love God, we do not always lead sexually pure lives and love and cherish our spouse as we should.
Does it only apply to husbands and wives, Pastor Kettner? Is it just a man and his wife, or does it apply across the board to everybody, regardless of their marital status and age?
As far as sexual thoughts, we can have impure thoughts, whether we're married or not, about other people. And even in my relationship with my wife, my sexual relationship with my wife, you know, Jesus said, "I did not come to be served, but to serve and give my life as a ransom." Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive. I think far too often, men especially, even in relations with our own wife, it's more what can I get from it than what do I give in it. So while the sexual act itself is not impure, the motives and the desires that are contained within it, even with your wife, can be selfish desires. So instead of trying to seek the need, serve the needs of my wife, I end up serving my own needs. And I think that carries out really to all of the sexual problems in our country, whether it be homosexuality or sex before marriage. Most people are trying to seek their own desires and their own needs, and they do not view their sexual aspect as, how can I serve God? How can I serve? What can I give in the way that I do these things, instead of what can I get?
I like to think of adultery as perversion in the purest sense of the term, as that term pervert is properly understood. Now, in our culture and world, we think of perversion basically just with regard to sexual sins. But perversion is to take what God has given to us, his good gifts, and to either A, use them improperly, or to B, use them against God. And certainly with adultery, with human sexuality, marriage and the family, we're taking a good gift that God has given to husbands and wives, that of sexuality, and have basically used it improperly, used it against our spouse, used it against God.
So we're talking here, just so everyone understands, at the outset, Pastor Day, with only about a minute and a half here, that God is not forbidding sex. He's not forbidding the good gift, the enjoyment of the good gift of sex, but he is, in fact, forbidding the, as Pastor McCracken would have said, the perversion or the abuse of this good gift, however that perversion or abuse may occur. Pastor Day.
Certainly, and certainly the sexuality and the gift of sexual relations between husband and wife is certainly a good and wonderful, gracious gift from our Lord. I mean, it finds its root kind of in the dirt of creation from the very beginning, as he would create us in his image. But I certainly agree, this perversion that is so embedded in us and our sinful nature. And as one of the brothers said, you know, even within the gift of marriage, you know, I will have couples on occasion sort of comment or ask, can our sharing of the gift of sex and sexuality in our marriage, certainly that could not have sin, correct? We could certainly not do anything that would be perverse in God's sight. I mean, you know, I think that you can, and I think this notion that for many of us, our sexuality, even with our spouse, is oftentimes so horribly self-serving and for self-gratification and self-pleasure, not really living for the other, that, you know, I think that that's something that even husbands and wives, if they're honest with themselves, there's certainly a struggle with, and it's a struggle that we are continually breaking that commandment, putting ourselves before the other.
Pastor Bart Day of Memorial Lutheran Church and School in Houston, Texas, is on the phone with us in our Pastor's Roundtable on this Thursday, October the 23rd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us here in the studio, Pastor Gary McCracken, pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Troy, Missouri, and Pastor Mike Kettner, pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Jacob, Illinois. You can join us. This break is a good time to call 1-877-623-MYIE or email talkback at issuesetc.org.
The way I do your cheating heart will tell on you.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. Issuesetc.org, click promote, and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Issuesetc.org.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Colin Kruger, M. Novak, Mark Vanderpool, Winona Taylor, Pastor John Knack, Janice Bald, Graham and Eloise Groth, Sandra Landenberg, Michael Mudge, and Joseph Landenberg. Thanks for your support.
Too Lutheran for a Lutheran radio station, you're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely upon you to pay for the production, salaries, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. That's Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Pretty woman, won't you pardon me? Pretty woman, I couldn't help but see. Pretty woman,
brings back some of the memories of the lust-laden youth of this particular pastor. Oh, my goodness. As a young man, how difficult it was to confront this commandment, you shall not commit adultery. I think a lot of teenage boys will try and convince themselves, well, come on, this really only applies to full-grown men who have wives. But you learn very quickly that the lust of the heart is something that begins early and lasts, at least in the men, pretty much forever until you die. There are a lot of old men sitting in the nursing homes when the nurse comes by to bring by the Jell-O saying, hey, sweetie, come on over here. I'd like to talk with you. They might not look like David Lee Roth, but they certainly are thinking like him. So it's not only the men, it's also the women. But this is a roundtable of pastors talking about the commandment, you shall not commit adultery. Everyone who calls or emails us this hour will receive a free pamphlet, What About the Ten Commandments? Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Let's talk about what this commandment commands or requires of us. Pastor McCracken, again, you said what it forbids. What does it positively require of each and every person who hears this commandment?
That we lead a sexually pure life, that we love and cherish our spouse. But unfortunately, we don't always do that. We break it.
What does – there are terms that Luther uses here, chaste, which most people have no idea what that means, and pure. What are these words? What do they say about the life that God is requiring here in this commandment?
That when it comes to human sexuality, that our thoughts, our words, and our actions are pure and God-pleasing.
How do we know if they're God-pleasing? I mean, what's the difference? Let's just see if we can get particular here. What's the difference between appreciating the beauty of a woman and looking so as to lust after her? Can you draw that line in your own mind?
I would say that someone could certainly compliment a woman on looking attractive, looking very nice. But if it gets to the point where he, in his mind, in his heart, is wanting to take that a step further, then he's breaking the commandment. Because he is giving to the other person something that rightfully belongs to his spouse.
Is he also trying to take from that person, even if it's just with his eyes, something that doesn't belong to
him? Absolutely. Yes.
Pastor Kettner, your answer to the same question, what is it that God requires of us in this commandment, you shall not commit adultery?
First of all, to address people that aren't married yet, I tell my confirmation students, my 7th and 8th graders often, simply the concept of saving yourself for marriage. And many people think that God puts some of these commands and laws on us, especially regards with sexuality, to try to not allow us to have certain fun and pleasure. But in reality, God is the one who made us. He knows what is best for us. And he knows that if we refrain from these sexual acts until we are married, that is how we will actually get the fullest pleasure and joy from the sexual act. So first of all, it begins with your single to abstain from these acts. And then when you're married, in the end, it comes down to hopefully you got two inexperienced people who are learning to appreciate each other in ways that nobody else has appreciated that person. And that's a learning process. You know, there's this idea when you're young and beautiful and you got the right curves or the right muscles, that somehow that's the most pleasure sometime of sexual activity. But actually, when husband and wife grow old together and they're learning together, actually it becomes more enjoyable and not less enjoyable. It might not be as often. And you're not going to look as pretty, maybe, but there's a whole lot. The Bible uses the word instead of sexual intercourse. It just says they knew each other, and know in the sense of experiencing each other in a very special and unique way. And so when you refrain from engaging in sexual activity before you're married, then, I mean, it's the fullest thing you get to know each other through the years in a special way.
While our society basically kind of turns the other cheek, so to speak, with regard to sex outside of marriage, premarital sex, you're actually sinning against your future spouse. You may not know your future spouse at this time, but you actually are sinning against him or her because you will not be bringing into the marriage the virginity, the purity that God desires you to bring into it.
Pastor Day, what are your thoughts here about when we talk about those, they may be young people, they may be old people, but people yet to be married or perhaps never married. What do you make of the conversation so far about being faithful to a future spouse?
Yeah, it's great, and I encounter this all the time in the parochial school. I mean, we're working through the catechism as we do every year, and so 2 weeks ago we're to the sixth commandment. Oh my goodness, how are you going to teach kindergarten, first grade kids, you know, about this commandment? What are you going to say to them? But you know, there is something very true in the biblical narrative that outside of being naked and with your spouse in marriage, there is deep-seated shame. I mean, after the fall in the garden, when they recognize they're naked, they understand their shame. And children understand this. In school chapel, you know, I preached and talked about the fact that you don't want to wear clothes because you like the designer labels or anything else. You want to wear clothes because the thought of you being exposed and naked to other people, anyone who is not your spouse, there is a deep-seated shame and humiliation that comes along with that. So, you know, I think that we have to speak with children from the very earliest ages quite open about their sexuality, that God has wonderfully made them both male and female, and that Adam lost something and gained something wonderful, someone who was like him but was not exactly like him. And that these two were given to each other, and that here in marriage there is no shame, and anywhere else there is. And so, you know, I encountered this with parents, you know, in confirmation class. Oh my goodness, are you guys going to talk about you know, sex and sexuality in school? And I say, of course we are, and we're going to talk about it in the context where it actually has some foundation and some teeth, and who they are as created children of God. And I said, I think if you will talk openly with your children about those things in that context, you'll have a whole lot better chance when they're in the back seat of the car with their boyfriend or girlfriend when they're 17 years old. They're not really thinking about sex ed class or health class or anything else. There has to be something more deeply seated in who they are as children of God and the wonderful gift that he's given them. And the children know that it's shameful. That's why they talk about it on the playground. It always has a stigma. I'm surrounded in Houston by more gentlemen clubs, I think, than any other city in America. But there is deep shame in these places. I mean, people do not want to be seen going in. They don't want to be seen going out. They don't want other workers to know that they're there. Because, I mean, even though the culture is so enticing and leading us there, there's something deeply held in us as children of God that these things are shameful. And I think children understand that, and they can truly grow to appreciate the gift of fidelity in marriage and waiting until their spouse is there so that they can completely give themselves to that other person.
This is Pastor Kettner. This idea, the human body is a beautiful thing, so why cover it up? And more today in our society, of course, people are wearing less and less. And I always like to point, you talked about Adam and Eve where they fell into sin. They were the only two people in the world. And yet when they looked at each other after they fell into sin, they instinctively covered themselves. The problem was not so to speak, with their body, with the beauty of the body, but rather what happened to their mind and to their soul and to their heart. Now their heart and soul and mind were corrupt, so that when they looked at each other, they were still beautiful, but now they thought sexually impure thoughts. So in trying to help young people deal with adultery, first of all, we've got to cover ourselves so that we don't lead other people into temptation. So that's another part of how we can lead a sexually pure life by not leading other people into temptation.
We're talking about the commandment, you shall not commit adultery. Our pastor's roundtable live this Thursday, the 23rd of October. This break is a good time to call, and everybody who calls or emails us, and if you want to call or email anonymously, feel free to do so. We'll honor that request. We'll send you a copy of the pamphlet called What About the Ten Commandments? Our call in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. talkback@issuesetc.org. Our pastor's roundtable, Pastor Bart Day of Memorial Lutheran Church and School in Houston, Texas. Pastor Gary McCracken, pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Troy, Missouri. And from Christ Lutheran Church in Jacob, Illinois, Pastor Mike Kettner. Coming up in about 25 minutes here on the program, Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. Some big hitters for this second hour, folks. Dr. Robert George of Princeton University will join us to talk about Senator Barack Obama and the abortion issue, clear up some of the misinformation that's out there. And then we'll talk about the problem of evil with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. I'm Todd Wilkins. Stay tuned.
LCMS Inc. canceled this? You're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Joshua Bissey, Elaine Keller, C.N. Henley, Randall Poppy, Ruth Pransky, Scott, Mrs. Anita Vandenberg, Kim Metis, R.C. Smith, and Scott Zweifel. Thanks for your support.
If you're interested in hanging around with a bunch of powerful men that further one another's careers, I guess you could meet Fred and Barney down at the Loyal Order of Water Buffalo. Stress is your problem, and those 40, 50 hours a week are killing you, and that cubicle's driving you nuts. Perhaps you should buy Joel Osteen's book and read it. If you're interested in Lutheran doctrine and practice and how we can spread that to our community, check us out. Brothers of John the Steadfast, www.steadfastlutherans.com.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Marie Stopes International is the largest global promoter and provider of abortion. When looking at the abortion industry in other countries, chances are Marie Stopes is the power behind the killing. A year ago, they launched a UN petition on their website calling for global safe abortion. In a year, fewer than 600 people signed it. As a result, they've taken the visible ongoing count off their website. A pro-life alternative petition was launched. In just the first 2 weeks, it had already collected 26,000 signatures. It shows only the world elites support the radical notion of killing unborn babies. A majority of the world's population respects life and opposes abortion on demand.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor's Roundtable, the commandment we're talking about today, you shall not commit adultery. Our call in number 1-877-623-MYIE or talk back at issuesetc.org. Before we go to this email, you had something you wanted to add to what Pastor Bart Day had said about adultery and the family, Pastor McCracken.
Yes, Pastor Wilkin. As a parish pastor, one of the things I can attest to is that adultery is not just something that affects the other spouse. It affects the whole family. Children learn from their parents how to relate to people of the opposite gender. When young men see their fathers, you know, ogling the NFL cheerleaders on TV, they learn that's how you treat women. And also, young ladies learn from their fathers how men are to treat them. And if they have, you know, poor role models, it certainly affects them.
See, this is, I got to say that whenever in my mind this whole notion of adultery in its fullest sense has ever cropped up, it always fills me with terrible dread. Because I think to myself, if I were ever, God forbid, to fall into this sin physically, while it would certainly devastate my wife, I think sometimes how the long-term irreparable damage it would do to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to myself, how could I do that not only to my wife, but to my children as well? Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely. Not just a sin against God, but also a sin against our spouse and a sin against our children.
Going back to the cheerleader thing, you know, there's a saying, you can look, but you can't touch. And that's not what Jesus said at all. Jesus did not say, you can look as much as you want, as long as you don't touch or as long as you don't carry the act. And that's the idea that we're all guilty of sexual sins. Because even in the looking, I mean, one time we might look at a beautiful girl and we might not think sexually pure impure thoughts. The next time we might look at them and we think sexually impure thoughts. So this whole idea about looking but not touching, that's not biblical at all.
Come on. I got married. I didn't go blind. I mean, you hear this kind of stuff. But, you know, that notion of the family, I think, is significant and the husband and wife, because I think in the end, all of the New Testament examples of marriage and the great marriage feast, which is yet to come, I mean, the whole giving of man and woman to one another is a reflection of God, the Holy Trinity. And marriage, I think, is to be, although it's not a real Lutheran kind of thing to say, I mean, marriage between husband and wife is to be an icon to the world. The world is to look at husbands and wives and see in some way Christ and his love for the bride, for his bride, the church. And that means that husbands and wives are going to do what Christian husbands and wives do, which is stay with each other and stick to it through thick and thin. You know, the notion that, you know, that you're just sort of romantically in love. I mean, what does romance, for anyone who's been married any period of time, I mean, it doesn't have to do with romance. I mean, it is about love, because even married spouses are going to roll over one day and look at each other and just be absolutely terrified. I mean, what did I get myself into? Why am I with this person? There's all these other fish in the ocean. And Bill Swirla has a great sermon on this where he talks about, and then you look at your wedding ring on your finger, which you can't take off because you're too fat. I mean, but you do what Christian couples do. You stick to it, and you do what Christ does to the church, which although she is horribly adulterous. And I mean, why is that image of her whoring after other people? I mean, it's quite specific. And I think it's intentional. And so the husband and wife are there with each other, going to bed, you know, toasting the worst day ever, and not basking in their honeymoon glory, as Swirl would say. But they are sharing with each other fidelity and commitment and love that simply can be matched in no other way. Unfortunately, the world and the commercialization of sexuality is so completely opposite of that I think this is why the church needs to build up young couples, needs to encourage them to really be faithful husbands and wives, so that the entire church has great examples of husbands and wives to look at who are reflecting the love of Christ for the church.
And it's a lie from Satan that one can simply look and not touch. Sin festers. And you look long enough, you're going to begin to touch.
I'd like to address this whole love aspect. In our country, we think of love primarily as how you feel about something. And so I say, I love chocolate. Chocolate gives me a warm feeling. We say, I love this person or that person. And we think, oh, well, that person gives me a good feeling. And that's the way love should be. But true love, biblical love, is not so much about how I feel about something, because that's what am I getting from that thing, but rather true love is about what do I give and how do I serve. And the love of Christ to his bride, the church, is not so much a declaration of what Jesus feels about me, but rather about his service and his life of giving his life for me. and so it is to be with a husband. That love a husband has for a wife, hopefully it is a reflection of how he feels about her. But even more than that, it's about how he serves her, how he gives himself to her. And once again, this is true in the sexual acts as well. It should be the act of the husband serving the wife, of the husband giving something to his wife, and in turn, the wife giving something back to him.
So there's a famous feminist out there. I can't remember her name, so I don't want to mangle it, but she's famous for saying the sexiest thing a man can do for his wife is the dishes. And maybe there's a grain of truth in that. This email comes from Gary in New Jersey. It says, is it possible? This is a tough one, so I'm going to toss this down to Pastor Day, who certainly has gotten this question from young people in the school. Is it possible for couples having sex outside of marriage to commit adultery, that is, cheat in some narrow sense against one another? What do you say, Pastor Day?
I'm sorry, you cut out for me just for 1 second there. I didn't hear the whole piece.
Okay, here it is. Is it possible for couples having sex outside of marriage to commit adultery or cheat in some narrow sense against each other? Pastor Day?
I don't know how you I've been trying to wrap my head around.
Is that just too twisted around to even give a decent scriptural answer to?
So you're talking about two people living outside of marriage but are somehow committed to each other and then committing adultery on each other, I guess, so to say, outside the confines of marriage with someone else. Are they sinning against each other? Is that the way this is going?
Yeah, I think that's the question.
Well, I mean, it's certainly adulterous, but it's the adultery, I think, against themselves and against God. You know, whether it's a sin against that other person who's not their spouse, I don't know that that works with sort of the biblical teaching. But, you know, I mean, it goes back to the whole very selfish notion, you know, about what is love. And if someone loves me enough and makes me feel good about myself, then I might love them back. It's certainly not the biblical notion of service and self-sacrifice.
Pastor McCracken, your thoughts there?
Absolutely. First of all, it is adultery because, let's say, for example, that this couple that are having sexual relations outside of marriage, let's say that they are not bound to be married to one another. They have given to the other person what rightfully belongs to their future spouses. And therefore, that is cheating, scripturally speaking. Even if they are bound to be married to one another, they are giving before the God-appointed time something to one another that God does not want them to give to one another at that time.
Okay, so let me see if I get this straight. What they're doing already with one another is adultery.
Certainly.
Now, if they were not quote-unquote, and I put big quotation marks around this word, if they were not quote-unquote faithful even to one another within that adulterous relationship, is it simply adultery upon adultery, Pastor Kettner?
It's been a long time since I've studied the word adultery. Its root etymology means to add something that is impure. And I think that really adds, especially in the case of the man, who in the act of adultery is adding something physically impure to a female. You know, I'm not exactly certain where the question was going to there, but it does make us impure.
It strikes
when we have
me that
sex with someone we're not married to.
It strikes me that the question, while it sounds rather unusual, and as Pastor Day said, it's hard to get your mind around a situation like that, is probably quite common. I mean, it's probably quite common that people who are not married, say cohabitating or just having sex together with each other on a regular basis, will then cheat on one another with someone else. In fact, I dare say that's as common as anything else out there in the world before marriage. Whether or not we can apply the commandment, you shall not commit adultery, to each individual act or kind of compartmentalize the various adulteries there, it might just be such a mess of sin that Scripture says, stop doing all of it all at once. We're talking about the commandment, you shall not commit adultery. What if you have? What if you really have cheated? Really, truly cheated, not just said in your mind, boy, wouldn't that be nice? Or looked with your eyes, no touching, but you definitely looked with your eyes and in your heart, it's the same thing as touching. What if you have? What does Jesus say? And how, if at all, did Jesus keep this commandment, you shall not commit adultery? Stay tuned. Our Pastor's Roundtable continues after this.
Would you like to post your favorite Issues Etc. audio segments on your website or blog? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the embed green logo, and copy and paste the embed code on your website or blog. It's just like posting a YouTube video. Embed Issues Etc. audio on your website or blog today. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology, issuesetc.org.
Pastor John Pless of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on Treasury of Daily Prayer.
I know of no resource that comes close to Treasury of Daily Prayer in terms of providing both pastors and laity a richly Lutheran book for reading, reflection, and intercession.
Find out more about Treasury of Daily Prayer at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Treasury of Daily Prayer.
We're not funded by LCMS, Inc. You're listening to Issues Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc., Pastor Adam Tisdale, Paul Flo, Lee Tomsick, Jamie Warning, Hillary Rose, Carol Ballard, Jim Rossman, Michelle Campbell, Rick Poor, and Marie Schaefer. Thanks for your support.
Christian apologist Gretchen Passantino on the importance of Issues Etc.
This is the best that Christian radio gets. And I know that anyone who listens to this show will get sound biblical doctrine and, most importantly, a complete focus on the cross and on Christ. I've done so many radio shows over 35 years, literally thousands of them, and I know of no other program that puts the cross and the gospel right at the focus of everything.
Christ-centered, cross-focused, Issues Etc.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our Pastor's Roundtable, Pastor Bart Day, Pastor Gary McCracken, and Pastor Mike Kettner for the next 10 minutes of the program. You can call us anonymously as we talk about the commandment, you shall not commit adultery, or email us anonymously. Plenty of time left. Feel free. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Talk back at issuesetc.org. Pastor McCracken, let's pick up where we kind of left off there. You had some thoughts off mic about the whole, we were kind of got ourselves mired in this question about what adultery is and what adultery isn't. What were your thoughts there to kind of clarify?
In terms of the question that you asked Pastor Day?
No, you had something that you wanted to talk about.
Oh, okay. When we talk of, or when we hear God speak in his scriptures regarding idolatry, he says, I am a jealous God. That is, he does not want given to other gods something that rightfully belongs to him. When we are talking about adultery, we are talking about one person giving to someone else or someone else's what rightfully belongs to their spouse. So I think that there could be a rightful spiritual jealousy, so to speak.
Okay. Pastor Day, when Paul says to the husbands, it's not your body, it's your wife's, and he says to the wives, it's not your body, it's your husband's, what is he saying there about marital purity, faithfulness to the marriage vow?
I mean, again, I think, you know, chicken and egg, it's the Trinity that comes first. I mean, the fact that that the Father is giving all things to the Son, and the Son is giving all things back to the Father and to the world. I mean, these things are then spoken of in the New Testament, and, you know, that this love is completely selfless. I mean, this has already been said several times. This is not something that is self-serving. It's not about getting something from someone else, but you entrust yourself totally and completely to the other, trusting that they truly have all kind of best intention for you in their hands. And so, you know, the one flesh relationship, which is certainly, you know, bedroom talk, that one gives themselves completely over to the other so that, you know, they are giving to each other their own bodies, which have first of all been given to them as a created and glorious gift from God, and bodies that have been redeemed by Jesus Christ. Because of those things, they are then to give each other to one another. I mean, to submit to Christ out of love for one another, and then to share that completely with each other.
Keith in Nebraska sends this email. He says, when we look with our eyes or toss the thought about in our minds, we have truly committed adultery and are just as guilty as the person who jumps into bed with his neighbor's wife. Your thoughts there, Pastor McCracken?
I think he hit it right on the head there. I mean, he gets right to the heart of the matter, because whether it's from the heart and has not been acted out on, just looking with our eyes, lusting in our heart, or whether that lust is acted upon in a physical way with another person, it's still the same thing. It's still adultery.
I can hear exactly what the average red-blooded American male is saying to that. He's saying, look, if it's the same thing for me to look as to jump into bed, I might as well jump into bed. How would you respond to somebody who says that?
They're lying to themselves.
Pastor Kettner?
I would say the consequences of those sins is different. All sexually impure thoughts are sinful in God's eyes and are worthy of his condemnation. However, the consequences of acting out on some of these thoughts could be far greater. If I think sexually impure thoughts about another woman but don't ever act on it, it doesn't destroy my wife. But if I carry out on those thoughts, it can, a far greater likelihood, destroy my wife and my marriage. It's like I hate someone, I get angry at them. I'm guilty of breaking the fifth commandment, you shall not murder. But the actual consequences of carrying out an actual murder will have far greater significance in the lives of other people.
Okay, before we round off this conversation, we've talked about what God forbids, what God commands. Where in the New Testament, Pastor Day, do we see Jesus himself? We don't generally think about Jesus in sexual terms, but where do we see him keeping this commandment, you shall not commit adultery, on our behalf?
Well, I mean, he's keeping it in and of himself in his chastity and in his purity of never taking a wife. And I know we're at the end, so we can't run off down too many wild roads. But, I mean, I think even more closely, think about the times that Jesus goes to those who are adulterers to offer them forgiveness in life that comes in him alone. I mean, he is not coming for the healthy. He's coming to be the physician of the sick. And the biblical example there is certainly those people who have unfaithfully given themselves in sexual ways to other people that are not their husband or their wife. And yet Jesus, embracing those people with the gospel, certainly there is repentance that comes through the law, but then becoming their sin. I mean, the thing that we talked about earlier about shame, I mean, the shame and humiliation of Jesus, his crucifixion, which was, you know, I would argue, certainly probably done completely in the nude, the public shame and humiliation that went along with such way of death. I think Jesus himself is becoming all that sin for us and is giving us plenty of biblical examples where he is reaching out to those like all of us in such a state of adultery with his own life and his own death.
I think one of the things that, and we've been talking in a lot of law terms this afternoon over the past 50-some-odd minutes, but in, you know, the purest gospel, Jesus on the cross. And I heard you preach this one time when I was doing field work for you on Good Friday, and it kind of struck me, the first time I'd ever heard it. When you see Jesus on the cross, you see the worst murderer, the worst adulterer, the worst, you know, thief, because he is bearing the sins of the whole world in his body on the cross. He is paying for that couple that right now is committing adultery in a motel room someplace, someone who's looking at pornographic material on the internet, someone who is thinking impure thoughts regarding another person that they're seeing on the street. All of that has been paid for by Jesus, who led the pure life that we cannot live, and then paid for our sins, all of the impurity, all the lust, all the adulterous things that come out of our pores with his own life on the cross.
For 1 Thessalonians 4, there's a verse, "For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that is, you abstain from sexual immorality, that each of you know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in lustful passions." And Christ did that perfectly. In a sense, every act we have in life is a sexual act, because we're all either a male or we're all either a female. Now, Christ carried out his life perfectly in that sense. And then we've been talking about even thoughts, sexual thoughts that are impure, are evil in God's sight. Most of all, on the cross, of course, Christ bore in his soul and his body every single sexually immoral thought or action that I carry out in my life. So even though we all stand condemned before God, yet there is hope, because in the death of Jesus Christ, all those immoral thoughts have been paid for in full.
Pastor Mike Kettner is pastor of Christ Lutheran Church in Jacob, Illinois. Thanks for traveling up to be part of the Pastor's Roundtable this Thursday.
My pleasure.
Pastor Gary McCracken, pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Troy, Missouri, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
And he didn't have to go anyplace. He just stayed in his office. Pastor Bart Day, associate pastor and headmaster at Memorial Lutheran Church and School in Houston, Texas, thank you so much for being our guest.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
It's hard to imagine Jesus making it all the way to the cross without ever once, not one single time, having a lustful thought. Not ever once, not one single time, desiring a woman in a sinful way. That whenever he saw a woman possessed of beauty, or when he saw some ugly old hag, he saw the beauty of God's creation. And he loved them with a pure love. This is the same Christ who actually sought out the professional adulterers, the prostitutes. He ate, he drank with them, he forgave their sins. And this is a Jesus who never had an impure thought, not once. And yet Scripture tells us he was tempted just like we are in every way, yet without sin. Now, why does Jesus do that? Is it because he's a straight-laced and a prudish man? Not in the least. He's sinless. He understands the good gift of sexuality better than any of us ever could. He actually invented the thing. And he came to bear in his own body, his own human body, which he took for our sake, all of our sins that wrap up and entwine our bodies each and every day, our minds. So he went to the cross, pure in body, pure in mind, for you and for me. And he bore those sins completely, so that the worst adulterer, professional adulterers, you know, I wouldn't call myself a prostitute. I'm a radio talk show host, but in my mind, I might as well be a professional adulterer. He died for even these sins, even the ones that we keep secret, sometimes even from ourselves. He bore our sin in his body so that we sinners, deep down in our hearts, might truly have his forgiveness and his righteousness. Stay tuned through the break. We got hour two of Issues Etc. straight ahead. We'll be talking about Barack Obama and his abortion views, and we'll answer the objection, which is, how could a loving God permit such evil? Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.